From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you. Later on, healing through the universal energy, Eric Pearl joins us. Here's what's happening. America's electronic spying chief has promised to give the entire Senate a rare classified briefing later about dozens of terror plots that he says were stopped by secret surveillance. The National Security Agency Director Kenneth Alexander defended the programs revealed by a former intelligence worker, Edward Snowden. He said that the U.S. was less safe now as a result of Mr. Snowden's actions. Well, let's check in with Ryan Morrow, of course, ClarionProject.org, and also the founder of WorldThreats.com. Ryan, I want your take on all of this. I haven't had a chance to talk with you about it. What do you think?
Well, my thinking is that Edward Snowden is definitely not a hero. And if you're working for the NSA and you want, there's something that you take issue with, the answer isn't to publish it in the press, because that's illegal and that does do damage to the ability of us to recruit spies and services and partnerships with foreign intelligence services. You go to the House or the Senate intelligence committees and you go through that route. And there's plenty of politicians that would love to expose abuse and get in front of the cameras doing so.
Okay, so you think he's not the hero. Is he a traitor?
The reason I don't use the word traitor is because in his mind, he's doing what's good for America. And to be a traitor, you have to have an allegiance to a foreign country. So technically, it doesn't mean he's a traitor, but he did commit a crime.
Okay, so you would do what? Arrest him?
Yes, I would.
You really would? Okay, well, but let me ask you this, Ryan. I mean, here we are, Americans, you know, we're entitled to our constitutional rights, we're entitled to privacy. I mean, it's kind of jarring to know that somewhere there's this agency out there recording, tapping, taking all our information. It's kind of tough. Even on you, Ryan, even on you, they probably have stuff.
Well, I would imagine so at this point. But if you go to ClarionProject.org, you can see my full analysis of these programs. The headlines are really being a bit overblown, and I'm not someone that is comfortable with government power of an excessive nature. I'm very cynical towards the government. But particularly when it comes to the issue of the phone records, the headlines are really kind of exaggerating what's going on, and it's become political theater.
All right, Ryan, thank you so much for your input. That's what we do. We balance the program. You get different views. A lot of you believe that Edward Snowden is a hero. You just heard from Ryan Morrow. A new statistical analysis showing that the world population could reach nearly, 11 billion by the end of the century, according to a United Nations report. That's about 800 million, or about 8% more than the previous projection of 10.1 billion issued in 2011. The projected rise is mostly due to fertility in Africa, where the UN had expected birth rates to decline more quickly than they have. 11 billion people on the population. Honda is recalling 104,500 cars in 49 countries worldwide to fix problems with the brakes. In the U.S., the recall covers more than 18,000 Acura RSX compact cars from 2006 and the Honda S2000 sports car from the 2006-2007 model years. You will get a notice if you own the car. Police in Louisiana say a call about an SUV being driven recklessly on the interstate led to them to pull over a 10-year-old boy who was sitting behind the wheel driving around. A Kenner Police News Agency says that the boy's grandmother and another woman in the vehicle were arrested when the car was pulled over on a city street. Police say that they told officers that the boy was driving because they were drunk. My. My 19-year-old granddaughter, Ori, sent me an email today, and she was panicking. She said, "Papa, don't ever flash your lights at someone who doesn't have their lights on at night." And I said, "What do you mean, Aria? I do this all the time." She says, No. It's a gang member initiation. And what they will do is they will try to kill the people who flash their headlights at them. So I did a little investigating, tried to calm her down, and I found out that this is one of those Snopes.com myths, those rumors out there. I don't think it's the case, But what they say is that there are gang members all around the country, and if you flash your lights at them, they purposely keep their lights off, that they're going to come after you. But according to Snopes, it's just a myth. Meanwhile, in St. Louis, four people shot to death at a business district area. Unbelievable story there. Devastating winds, hail, even tornadoes were forecast for the East Coast. Some areas getting slammed now, caused by a massive storm system that tormented the Midwest a day earlier. Flood warnings in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. Let's check in with none other than Mitch Batras from EarthChangesMedia.com. This has got to be one of those incredible springs, Mitch.
Well, it does happen from time to time. They call it a derecho. It's a storm of strong straight-line winds spanning about 250 miles, usually associated with thunderstorms. Most often the wind direction is from east to northeast. So it's coming out of the west coast, going east to north-northeast. These winds are pretty strong. They've been clocked at 70, 80 miles per hour. In some ways, it looks like a tornado, or at least the devastation does, except there's no funnel and there's not a circular or bouncing around type events that tornadoes do. However, they do spin off tornadoes, and more than 24 tornado warnings have already been placed in that area. Two other things to watch for are microburst, which is a downdraft, a sinking air, if you will, most often associated with thunderstorms. And it can cause a great amount of damage, even more so than tornadoes, and, of course, especially dangerous for aviation. The other is the wind shear. The wind shear is a rapid change of wind in its direction, usually from low latitudes, say ground level, up to mid latitudes, 2 to 10,000 feet. Those are also devastating. But this derecho, it's been around. As a matter of fact, just last year, July 2nd, 2012, derecho of violent thunderstorms left more than a 700-mile trail of destruction in the Midwest and Mid-Atlantic. All this has been a result of this interplay between what's happening in near Earth space and in mid-space, in the ionosphere, and the Earth's core. So the oceans are heating up, which causes a causal effect to the jet stream. All that is what we're seeing play out right now.
Well, you know, and Mitch, I'm feeling this. I'm flying a lot lately, and I'm feeling more turbulence than I've ever felt before. Mitch's website, earthchangesmedia.com, part of our Twitter feed. Colorado, I'll be there this weekend taping our Beyond Belief television programs, but already wildfires there have destroyed more than 350 homes, forcing evacuations of thousands of people. Two people already reportedly dead because of that situation. It's the officials are dubbing this the Black Forest Fire, making it one of the most destructive in Colorado's state history. This is a bizarre thing that's happening now, primarily in Japan. I'm sure it'll happen here. Pink eye cases have been spreading among Japanese school children as a result of a new bizarre fetish. It's called, get this, eyeball licking. I kid you not, they lick the eyeballs of other kids. Yuck, but it's happening. It's happening there, and with the social network, I'm sure it'll happen here. Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center on this week's UFO update. Peter, what's going on these days?
Well, good evening, George, and thanks for having me on tonight. A lot's going on. I'm being bowled over by information, and I take particular pride in keeping the NSA apprised of what's going on through their monitoring program, but I'd like to focus on recent events. These are events that have taken place within the last 24 hours over the states of South Carolina and Montana. Really very, very interesting cases. I'll start with South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, North Myrtle Beach, Pawleys Island, and several other cities along the coast just north of Georgetown. This is a phenomenon that's been going on for probably 8 years, and I have absolutely no understanding of what's going on there. People seeing clusters of orange lights, the same ones I've been talking about on this program now for months. It's tempting to say, well, they're just nothing but military flares, but that clearly is not the case. 2 nights ago, a group of people, including a police officer, saw 4 red lights off the coast of North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and they were leapfrogging one another. Clearly not military flares. About 2 hours after all of this happened last night over South Carolina, got a very dramatic sighting from a very sane and sober-minded sounding fellow in Kalispell, Montana. He and his wife were out walking their dogs. They were flabbergasted to see an orange light streaking at them from the northwest. Before it was all said and done, the object was about twice the size of a full moon in the night sky. Very, very large object. They were flabbergasted by it.
Amazing.
Object just suddenly departed by going vertically through the clouds. Have no idea what it was. Lots going on. We should have all these reports posted to our website this weekend. But with your permission, I'd like to close with just a brief comment. During the hour and a half before this program began, the National UFO Reporting Center received 19 prank phone calls, George.
Is that high for you?
Yes, it is high. But I have to comment. I'd like to speak to the American people. If we have people in the United States who are doing this kind of thing, they spend their days trying to figure out how they can be the greatest nuisance to their fellow citizens. That concerns me vastly more than whatever the aliens have planned for us. If they're here, I think they are. But it's terribly disheartening. If people are going to use our service, I would request that they not call us with frivolous and stupid and quadruple X-rated phone calls. It just is, we've got to stop this. People who act like that cannot remain a free people for very long.
Well, you know what you have to do, Peter? Here's a little recommendation. Put in caller ID and capture those phone numbers.
Oh, yeah.
and then go right back after them.
Yep. George, it's an excellent suggestion. There's so many of them that if I were to do that, I would be spending my whole day just parrying the effect of prank phone calls. Anyway, thanks very much for allowing me to voice my opposition to this nonsense.
And we'll talk to you next week, Peter.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Peter Davenport, website ufocenter.com. Great information there. Up next, The Healing Gift, exploring the remarkable world of a medical intuitive. We'll have that next for you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Fascinating night for you. Split show, The Healing Gift for the next couple hours. David and Linda Freud. Linda, of course, is a medical intuitive, works to help heal physical, emotional, and spiritual blockages. Her work involves channeling angels and spirits. They get advice to those with challenging cases. Here's Linda, first of all. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hi. Good evening, George. Very well. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to this. And author David Freud is a medical and spiritual researcher as well. He works with Linda in her work to get the information about reincarnation and the afterlife. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, George. It's great to be here.
Any relation to Sigmund?
Yep, I sure am. It's a distant cousin, several generations removed. And, we've been talking to him for a number of years here, and there's a very close bond between him and I.
I knew it was genetic. I knew it. Well, that's great. Let's talk to both of you. In both your phone lines are up. Jump in anytime you want over the next couple hours here with The Healing Gift. How did this all start? Linda, let's start with you.
Well, actually, it started when David and I met. I didn't know. I'm not one of these people who was born knowing that, you know, she had a gift. And it really came about after we met. David and I were both very ill in the 1990s when we did come together. We were introduced by our naturopath. And I guess he felt sorry for us. And we got together. And David asked me out, but we would see each other, and he'd say, how do you feel? I said, not so good. How do you feel? And he'd say, not so good. And so we would stay in. And basically, as we spent time together, my gift opened up because the two of us are soulmates.
How about that, David? It seems like it was magic, huh?
Well, yeah, and the truth is, yeah, when we met, she couldn't do any of this. We have a friend of ours who is a great expression. He says, when you met Linda, Linda couldn't pendle rain in a monsoon storm. And a pendle is kind of a slang phrase we use, meaning
when I use the pendulum.
When she uses the pendulum.
Yeah.
So the gift came after we met. In fact, the whole story of how the gift actually opened is pretty extraordinary. I don't know if you want me to go into that, but
yeah, no, please go ahead.
Well, basically what happened is this. We were, as Linda had mentioned, we were both pretty ill. I had horrific chronic fatigue due from severe mercury toxicity, and she also had pretty serious problems as well. And I had a host of other health issues as well. But we were already kind of past pharmaceutical medicine. We were seeing both working with a naturopath that had introduced us, as she had mentioned. And we were in Pasadena. We went to one of these New Age health shows. And we're walking up and down the aisles, and we stopped by a booth, Kroger Herbs, and there was this old lady there who had Hannah Kroger in her Bavarian regalia, and she had not only these herbs, but she had a row of pendulums, a line of pendulums she was selling. And Linda goes, oh, I've always wanted a pendulum. I'm courting her, so I figured, all right, I'd buy her a pendulum. So I bought her a pendulum, gave Hannah $18, and she was all excited. We got home, and she starts playing with it. And I say, and I'm not very encouraging. I said, look, Linda, you know, this isn't going to replace our doctor or anything. This is, if you want to view it as kind of an armchair curiosity, that's fine, but don't get too carried away with yourself. But in any event, what happened then is she started putting the pendulum over bottles of supplements, and it would spin to the right or to the left, right meaning yes, left meaning no. And then she would kind of pendle the dosage, how many she needed. Yeah. And I wouldn't tell her what the naturopath had gotten, but it was amazing how she was matching what he had given without me telling her. So I was very intrigued by this. So I began to put together little databases of cause and effect of disease etiology and anatomy, and I started building this database of stuff. And I'd say, okay, Linda, pendle on this and see what you get regarding our health. And so I wouldn't tell her what had happened when I had seen the naturopath, and she would get it, and she was confirming what he had gotten. And it was pretty amazing. And then one day, she's doing a health reading for me. She was beginning to do these health readings.
Yeah.
And suddenly, she hits on something, and she starts shaking violently back and forth.
Like an epileptic
fit?
Yeah,
and I looked at her.
Yeah, he was so upset. You know, he was worried.
I looked at her, and I said, great, Linda, you've got epilepsy, just what we need. And, I mean, it looks like epilepsy.
Right, right.
And I was thinking, well, I better take her over to the hospital to have the neurologist look at her. But I figured, I'm just going to watch this for a while. It was like it would shake and last for like a few seconds, and then it would stop. But I noticed that this would only happen when she was holding the pendulum. It wouldn't happen the other time. So I thought, well, that can't cause epilepsy. That doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. There's no cause and effect there. So I'm figuring, what can this be about? So I was just kind of took a wait-and-see attitude. Anyway, during that time, I'm also involved in my spiritual studies, and I'm reading a book called Meditation in the Bible, which is a book about Kabbalah, and which is the perspective Linda and I come from. And I'm reading a section on prophecy. And I'm reading... there's this one comment, and this rabbi who was commenting on how the Hebrew prophets would do their prophecy, and explained that when they would receive the information, it would come from the angelic realms vis-a-vis a lens called the ispaklaria in Hebrew, and it would come down, and it would hit their crown chakra and shoot down their spinal cord. And when this would happen, they would convulse and shake because they couldn't handle the energy.
Okay.
So he described this. This is all historical writings. It's a famous rabbi named Maimonides. And he would describe this, and he said that the prophets felt like they were, when this feeling would come over them, they felt like they were being turned inside out. So I said to Linda, I put this book down. I'm looking at her.
Hold on right there, David. We'll pick it up when we come right back. We're with David and Linda Freud. We're talking about the healing gift next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, David Freud with us and Linda Freud as well. We're talking about their work, The Healing Gift. Linda is a medical intuitive. David is a medical and spiritual researcher. David, I'll let you continue with this story.
Yes, just to reiterate very briefly. So I'm reading this book, this Kabbalistic book, and it's describing what prophecy is like. And again, it said, when God reveals himself and bestows his influence, the prophet is greatly overwhelmed. His body and his limbs immediately begin to tremble, and he feels as though he is being turned inside out. And as I mentioned, again, I put the book down, and I turned to Linda, and I said to her, I said, honey, what does it feel like when you get this shaking? And she thought about it for a moment, and she said, I feel like I'm being turned inside out. I said, you're not going to believe what I just read. Then I handed her the book, and she started scanning, reading the passage. And when she got to the part where she read about that, suddenly she starts shaking uncontrollably with an intensity I had never seen. And we knew for then with absolute certainty that there was some sort of angelic verification of what was really going on. So it was pretty traumatic, but ultimately in a very good way. We were just stunned that this had happened. And then her gift began to grow, and I began kept working on these databases, which actually it's an ongoing labor of love.
Right.
I developed this process called metaphysical systems engineering, which basically organizes the body, the emotions, and the spiritual world. It organizes them into categories and ways that she can take the pendulum and scan a list and go down it to get incredibly accurate and detailed levels of information.
That's fascinating. So let's bring you in here for a moment, Linda, and explain to us exactly what is a medical intuitive.
Okay, well, a medical intuitive, let's see. I think most people are somewhat familiar with a forensic psychic who's brought in to solve a crime.
Right.
Right. A medical intuitive is like a medical psychic detective. And so the medical intuitive is brought in to find hidden causes of chronic medical conditions that have eluded conventional doctors and diagnostic lab tests. Actually, the term medical intuitive was coined by Carolyn Mace, who's, you know, the author of several best-selling books on the subject. And, you know, we really have a debt of gratitude to Carolyn for opening the door for the acceptance of my work.
That's true. And the doctors, though, that we've worked with, they believe that Linda is far more advanced than any other medical intuitive that they're aware of.
Okay. So now how do you work? Linda, how does that work? And David, how does she work?
You want me to say? Okay. What I do is I channel with the pendulum, and as David mentioned, he's put together these complex databases of information. So I do have the medical, I have the emotional, and the metaphysical information. And what I do is I channel the angels and the spirits, and I receive detailed information on the chronic health conditions. I should say that I do not treat disease. What I do is address underlying factors behind most chronic conditions that conventional doctors, you know, often ignore. And, you know, a lot of times that involves channeling the environmental toxicity that's burrowed in tissue where it will not show up on lab tests. I also channel nutritional deficiencies as well as energetic imbalances. And then to pull it together, I channel the appropriate natural remedies, the detoxification protocols, as well as a customized diet, which obviously supports the healing. And in doing so, in doing my medical work, I work with and under the medical license of Dr. Tom Loeb, who's the medical doctor at Regenevita in Beverly Hills, California. And I also work with the Malibu Beach Recovery Center in Malibu, California.
Okay, so let's bring you in here, David. Talk about the premise of the healing gift, yours and Linda's work, which is fascinating, by the way. But give me an overview.
Okay, sure. Well, when I first started to write the book, which took me over 3 years to do, It was a bit daunting to try to figure out how to describe the totality of what Linda's actually capable of doing. And what emerged was kind of a logical integration of two separate sections of the book that describe the two separate types of information she channels. That's to say, medical information and the spiritual and emotional information. And basically, there's only two types of information that can exist in the world, objective information and subjective information. In order to be taken seriously, I had to first build a case for establishing scientific credibility that the medical information that she channels is accurate and objective. And only then could I dare discuss the extraordinary spiritual and metaphysical revelations contained in the second part of the book. And because she can heal medical conditions that elude conventional doctors, and she's also endorsed by some of the leading doctors in the world, means that her gift must be considered to be objective, and it's all results-oriented. Linda says she does this work by channeling angels and spirits, and therefore, when she gets subjective information, such as her conversations with the dead and reincarnations and her understanding of the angelic and spirit worlds, it too must be taken seriously, for it all comes from the same spigot as the medical information.
Is this a little like Edgar Cayce and the things he did?
Yes, in some ways there is a correlation. We're big admirers of Edgar Cayce. I will say that Linda gets a level of detail that I believe to be unprecedented, and the doctors that have worked with her believe to be unprecedented. And because of this shaking phenomenon, it's kind of like there's this connection to the ancient times and the ancient Hebrew prophets, because they too also had this shaking. So I'm not making the claim that she is the sheikh, that she is a Hebrew prophet, but I am saying that she exhibits the characteristics that they had, and she's able to get unbelievably detailed information. So it's kind of like a new sort of prophecy for the modern age, for those that are intended for those who demand scientific exactitude. That's why many people believe her gift represents a unique opportunity for humanity to peer beyond the veil of hidden knowledge to grasp, you know, how angels function in the world.
Linda, I have to assume that since you were a child, you had this gift.
Well, what it is that the gift is part of the soul of who I am. And so basically, the gift isn't because of what I've done or who I am in this incarnation. What we believe and understand is it has to do with my chain of souls and who I've been. And so I brought the gift in with me. However, it wasn't activated until David and I came together.
It's a very unique situation because it is really predicated on who Linda is on a reincarnated level. That is what determines, that's the determining factor of why she can in fact do this. There is no other reason.
Were you the catalyst here for this, David?
Well, on some level, because in the sense that our gift didn't happen until we came together. As she said, she couldn't do this until we were brought together. And she did help to save my life, which was part of the reason that she got the gift, because I was incredibly sick and I had already gone through a horrific set of illnesses, which is outlined in my book, what I went through and the healing discoveries that we had to make. So we embrace science, although the science is not always is rarely mainstream science. It's more alternative and runs the gamut of natural healing modalities, including homeopathy, orthomolecular nutrients, herbs, diet, the whole gestalt of that. But in embracing this, we basically came to the understanding that there was a spiritual impetus behind this that caused the gift to burst forth at this time.
You had said earlier that Sigmund Freud, a distant relative, mm-hmm. still kind of communicates now through Linda. How does that happen? What's going on there?
Well, absolutely. This has been going on for a number of years. He's, in fact, Linda's primary spirit guide, there is the genetic component, obviously, in my situation, but he's in the spirit world really very much different in some ways than he was. And we're happy to report he's made enormous progress in the spiritual world, and he assesses his own life's work in a very interesting way. Some things that he did, he absolutely stands by. Other things, he says to us, what was I thinking? And still other things, it's like, well, neurology wasn't, in my day, wasn't where it is today. You have to remember, he was first and foremost a neurologist. And he in the spirit world, he relishes his role as being a scientist. And he has come to us and wants to use Linda as his spokesperson. He has a great deal to say on a whole wide range of different subjects. And among his goals is the desire to refashion the field of psychology in the 21st century through Linda.
Linda, are you getting bombarded by the spirit world trying to get messages to us?
You know, one of the things that I've learned along the way is to manage my gift. So when my gift first opened up, yes, I felt bombarded. I also didn't do very well if I was in large groups of people. I still have a little bit of trouble going to shopping centers where there's a lot of fluorescent lighting, et cetera. So basically, over the years, I've learned to protect myself and actually not have my gift on unless I am sitting in what I call my sacred space and activating, you know, my channeling. Now, it is true that I do get shaken, but I get shaken outside of my formal sessions by those spirits such as Sigmund Freud and angelic guides, and also my past lives also come to speak mm-hmm. with me. So it's very different than it was when I first started. So I very carefully protected myself, and I do tell people that in the practice of dealing with spirit, one should do spiritual practices, one should do prayer, one should do meditation, because these are the ways that keep us connected to the light force, that give us strength, because we're being allowed to communicate with the upper realms for the purpose of bringing forth this shift in consciousness. Otherwise, it wouldn't be allowed to happen.
And it's kind of an interesting thing. I'm in the business of promoting somebody who does their work by reducing their ego down to spirit.
Right.
So yeah. It's an interesting conundrum. I'll tell you a little Sigmund story you might find interesting. In 2005, I took Linda to the Freud Museum in London, and my son Arye to this museum, and they'd never been there. I had been there before, but they'd never been there. And we walked through the halls, and it's like a temple to Freud. It borders on worship, you know, for his work and his life. Mm-hmm. And the people there, these are the real strong Freudians that obviously cherish his memory and keep the flame alive for him. And, in fact, we even met with the directors of the museum, and they were always thrilled when family members come in. And, you know, we told them about our communication with Sigmund Freud in the spirit world, which slightly startled them. And as we were leaving, Linda suddenly started shaking, and I pulled her aside to get her, to tell her to get out her pendulum. And Sigmund came to her and to tell her what he thought of his museum. And, you know, although he was touched by the love and admiration shown to him, he told Linda, the continued glorification of my work as a springboard for future research is stale. Now, that speaks of his humility. And he wasn't exactly the most humble man in his lifetime. So he's gone through quite a catharsis in the spirit world and has many, many important messages to relay to us. And he, again, wishes to utilize Linda as his voice to channel these communications.
Linda, tell me a little bit about this angelic realm that seems to have tapped into you, or you tapped into it. Just what is it?
Well, basically, angels are actually messengers of God. And so, you know, we don't pray to an angel, we pray directly to God, because they are messengers. They are light, they're beings of light, and they are thought forms that God has created for specific functions. And, you know, I have to say, I'm always, I don't want to say tickled, but I'm so honored that I am able to communicate with them and that they speak to me.
You know, I'll say this, that just picking up that, in the book, there's a chapter called Belief in Angels, a Common Bond for the World's Religions, where I postulate that having a scientific proof of the existence of angels could serve as a basis for meaningful dialogue between religious groups, as well as conflicts with governments, because all religions believe in this concept, although they have different versions of it. This would be the quickest way to bust open consciousness that would be needed for peaceful resolution of our serious global problems.
Beautiful.
And it would also forever end the issue of who really runs the world.
Go ahead, Linda.
Within the, with angels, there's a hierarchy and there's different worlds. But basically, I have a main group that I usually speak with, and these are the four archangels, who are called the angels of the throne: Archangel Michael or Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel. I also speak to Archangel Raziel, who's involved with healing as well, Azrael, who is past life information, and then, of course, my clients' guardian angels, because when I'm working with someone, I also have present their guardian angel and their appropriate spirit guides. And it's interesting because sometimes the room can feel very crowded because depending on how much consciousness a person has and how connected they are.
Linda, have you ever felt that you were being deceived, that maybe they were devils or demons or bad fallen angels and they're out to trick you?
Early on, we had experience with, we don't say certain names. We just don't give them, we don't say the names, but certain angels of the dark side. And so through that learning experience of learning how to recognize their energies and who they are, we then put our safeguards in place.
There are techniques of psychic self-defense that you can utilize to thwart that. You know, the analogy I say is you can walk into a very dark, large room with a small match and you light up the whole room.
I would say, though, and, something that I really don't do a lot of anymore, I just really don't, is when an individual has an attachment, when they have, an earthbound soul connected to them and they come in for a reading, there is a logic to my process, even though I'm channeling. And I think that's part of what makes what I do unique is the beauty of the databases David has put together, the metaphysical systems engineering. If my reading begins to not make sense, that's a clue for me to check my metaphysical goral, my chart of metaphysical possibilities. And by checking it, oftentimes I'll see something that's interfering with the session, ask the light for guidance and how we take care of it, and then we can move on and do a pure reading. So, I think over time we've just sort of developed these ways of being able to immediately identify what's going on.
This is an ability, I just want to say this, called in Hebrew, they call it a dibbuk, and this means an earthbound spirit. And it's interesting because the old priests and rabbis knew how to clear these things out. They were trained in how to do it, but it's kind of a lost art. And it doesn't happen often, but I'd say maybe 7-8% of the time, something like that. Linda will, a client will come in who will have a Dybbuk attachment that she has to clear out.
We're going to take some phone calls with both of you and talk about reincarnation. And I understand you're in communication, Linda, with Michael Jackson. We'll talk about that when we come right back.